This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
Welcome to Sons of a Gun, a podcast about the DC universe. I'm a son of a gun. I'm Alex Gunn.
I'm Justin Gunn, and this is a big day for the fam.
I'm Pete.
And we are going to be talking about Superman, the new movie that is in theaters now. If you haven't seen it, I'm going to put a spoiler warning here at the top, because we're going to jump into all of our spoilery thoughts as we review and recap and discuss the movie. For a little bit of context, we're taping this on Sunday morning. We've all had our Sunday morning Pez to get our energy, so we are hyped
exactly.
up and ready to go.
And we've all been out there whacking our weeds, getting ready to record a podcast fueled by Pez and Pez alone.
Yep. So very excited to talk about this with you guys. We've been doing the Sons of a Gun podcast for a good long while. Creature Commandos was the little appetizer before the main meal that is Superman, which is kicking off the DCU proper in big style, the main story of Gods and Monsters, Chapter 1, that's going to go through Supergirl next year, Clayface, Lanterns, and who knows beyond that. Maybe they'll announce some more stuff tomorrow, I guess. We'll see.
It's very funny to hear you say Gods and Monsters, something I don't know if I've heard since the last time you said that on a podcast. Like, that is not a thing.
They say it right at the beginning of the movie. That's like the first line of the movie, 300 years since the introduction of metahumans, an age of gods and monsters. So they're setting it up right there. But we're jumping ahead here because, as usual, what I always like to talk about here, because I do think it provides a certain level of context, is talking about how we saw the movie and what the reaction was for the theater as we're taping this. It's having a big opening weekend. Initial estimates seem to be about in the 120 to 130 million range, which would put it about on par with not top tier superhero movies, but definitely like really solid, really good opening for Superman. But what was your experience like, Pete, for you? When did you see it? And what was the audience reaction?
It was packed house. I saw it 1 o'clock on Saturday in the afternoon. I did the IMAX 3D.
You love those premium formats, man. You always go for those.
Well,
yeah. 3D.
I Googled beforehand. It was like, hey, do you need to watch this in 3D or is it, you know, and they said, see it in IMAX. The computer that I asked the question to. And so then there wasn't just an IMAX showing at the time I wanted to see. So I said, oh, fuck it. I'll pay the extra money. But it kind of backfired because the glasses were really wonky on my head. I didn't get a right size. And people were like it was a loud theater, and a lot of people were coming and going, and not many people were focused on the movie. Yeah, so that was, I was a little distraction. It could have affected my review and how I was feeling about things.
Important question. The glasses didn't fit. Were they too big or too small?
Too small.
Oh, you got your little spectacles.
Well, because I got to get like big ones to put them over my glasses. You know what I mean?
You got to bring your own novelty 3D glasses that say like 2026 on them or something. That's
I still got my Wonder Woman 3D glasses. I should have brought those.
You should have. Have a backup. That's the main takeaway here.
Yeah,
Justin, what about you? When did you see the movie? What was your experience?
I saw the movie Thursday afternoon at a movie theater in way upstate New York, which was mostly empty. I will say it was the afternoon, so people were maybe still at work. Right. But there were only like 15 other people there. I brought my wife and four kids, my kids and my nephews. So it was definitely like an old school movie going experience. It was the kind of thing where there was a lot of shushing for a while at the top. Great way to get into the movie, almost like a too small 3D glass emotional experience. Mm-hmm. But at one point, a couple of the kids were throwing out some jokes that got the theater laughing, which I was like,
They're related to you, so it was
crazy to be on the other side of that, because usually I was the one that would maybe try to do that every now and again. But wow, to have it be, it was the moment in the movie when they're talking about, he's talking about the band he likes.
Yeah,
The Mighty Crabjoys.
And Tommy, my nephew, goes, "I like them." And it was really funny. The whole theater laughed. I was like, holy shit, banger joke.
Yeah.
But yes, that was my experience.
Nice. I've seen the movie twice so far. The first time I saw it on Tuesday at a press screening, and that was fine. I saw it in IMAX there, and I actually would recommend seeing it in IMAX.
Same.
Having seen it in IMAX, and then I saw it Friday night with the family in regular format. It really does fill the whole screen and looks really nice. Like, particularly that first, I know this is there's the rest of the movie, but like that first shot really establishes just there's a big difference in the format when you're seeing it on that huge screen in Antarctica, and it just feels very enveloping there. So, yeah, if you can see it in that format, highly recommend it. The funny thing to me with the press screening, which was crazy, is like, and we'll talk about the end credits scene later, but most of the people stayed through the first, I'll put in quotes, end credits scene with Crypto and Superman. And then they start to do the thing, and I can't believe people are still doing this, but like they start to do the thing where like they start to stand up and like get their bag together, not put their coats on because it's really hot outside, but like slowly walk down the aisle for the entire duration of the rest of the credits. So that by the time they get to that last end credit scene, they're just standing there in front of the screen. Mm. It's like, I don't know, sit down for two more. Where are you going? Why are you leaving? What head start are you getting on?
I had to use the bathroom, so I was doing that kind of like by the last end credits. I was kind of by the door being like, yeah. Like, I need to use the bathroom. Like, let's get this over with.
And I think a lot of end credits are meant to be enjoyed when you're having a tiny pee-pee dance. Like just a little bit of moving around.
You know what they got to do is they got to put urinals at the front of the theater so you can get up during the credits, piss right there in front of everybody, and then you're good to go.
When you go to the bathroom, have it be playing right there in front of the urinals. Oh, that way.
100%. Yeah.
That's really smart. Or you could bring your own 3D glasses and a catheter, maybe any other bodily fluid catcher, colostomy bag.
Yeah, that's what the collectible popcorn bucket is for, is you finish the popcorn and then you piss right in Crypto's mouth. Anyway, IMAX showing, the press showing was fine. Like, usually those are pretty muted in terms of the reaction. But it was actually great seeing it again with a full audience on Friday night in New York City. People reacted. They were laughing. They were clapping. They were cheering. Having a great time. And the kids really liked it as well. My son, who I unfortunately have twisted into a horrible little critic, came out arms crossed. And he's like, "Well, Mr. Terrific is a top 10 character for me, but I do have some issues with the movie." And then the entire way home was like,
"You've created a monster."
My brother loved it, though.
A lot of people say
my daughter gave it 4 stars on Letterboxd.
So. Wow. Oh, Letterboxd. Yes. A lot of people talk about nature versus nurture, but you've been able to line up nature and nurture to build super critics for the future.
Oh, my God.
It's really great. 100%.
And my wife loved it as well. So that's the setup there. Let's now continue to talk broadly, but like broad opinions. And Pete, I'll turn to you for your broad opinion about something very specific about the movie I can't predict.
Oh, okay, great.
We know each other too well.
Yeah. I feel like it was pretty chaotic, you know, and I was kind of thrown, and it could have been my glasses, but I was kind of like reading, and then it was like, oh, shit. We're in the middle of it. We're in the mix. This isn't a soft launch. We're like, fucking, it's go time. So that was a little kind of like jarring. And it felt like there was just so much happening all the time that I didn't get. Like, it did slow down when we got to, like, I got choked up at the farm when Lois was in his childhood bedroom. And that was kind of like a nice emotional moment. But yeah, overall, I wanted to like it more. And some days when I wake up, I like it more. But I don't know, man.
Someday.
I'm struggling with I didn't hate it. I didn't love it. But some days I like it more than others. But yeah, there was just a lot going on. And some of the choices I loved, some of the choices not so much. But yeah, just in broad terms, that's kind of how I'm feeling.
Yeah, I'll just jump in here to say I think I'm actually kind of on par with you, Pete. I liked it better the second time, but I had fun. I'm very positive on the movie. I enjoyed it. Lots of stuff that I loved. Lots of quibbles that I have as well that I'm sure we'll get into, and sort of bigger criticisms as well. Overall, positive about it. But I agree with you. It's just it's a movie with a lot of things going on at all times, and it just keeps hitting you. Not to cross the streams of our podcast, but I said a similar thing with Ironheart, that I would rather have more ideas than less ideas. And this has a lot of ideas, but my major criticism of the movie is I wish it had whittled out like 5 of those and focused in a little more on the ones that it had left. I think overall that would have made for a stronger movie. So positive start, had a fun time both times I saw it. There's some funny lines. There's some romantic stuff that I really like, but a little mixed. And Justin's been smiling the entire time. I think he is going to be the most positive one on the podcast. That's
get out of here, you dorks. I love this movie. This is the best. I can't believe you guys are quibbling about this.
What are you talking about?
It was so good. It went so hard. The way that it was the most comic book representation I think we've seen bar none across all movies and television.
Oh my god!
It felt so comic booky.
John Carter alert! Oh my god! You're pulling a Zalman going so hard for a movie that's mid. Holy shit!
This movie will not be universally panned like the one that Alex liked. I think we've already seen that.
People like John Carter. There's a real John Carter renaissance going on.
Yeah. In your household with the children you're making, say that. By raising them to like it as well.
I mean, making
every night I put them to bed with, just okay, good night, I love you, John Carter is good.
Yeah, that's your Lord's Prayer right before they go to sleep. The way that this was able to, there was a lot going on, but that's how comics are. There's a lot going on in comics too. And I feel like the big choices of having a goofy Superman, so it works so well. The comic book logic, it really happened for me when we go into the pocket dimension and we see all the monkeys typing. Mm-hmm. I was like,
oh,
wow.
You thought that was awesome.
I was like, oh, they committed to the unreality of this and the fact that just in the small strokes, like everyone in Metropolis was barely like reacting to all the danger around them, especially the Daily Planet staff, even when the world's being ripped in half. I just thought top to bottom, it was so many big swings that I think paid off really well emotionally, action wise, from a superhero perspective. And here I'm going to say something even crazier. Well, let me ask you first, what comic book movie, what superhero film across all of them did this the most remind you of? or what was your connection point to the rest of superhero moviedom while watching this movie?
What?
Well, this is a little bit of a side comment, but I'll get to it. I agree with you on the comic book nature of the movie. It is explicitly a Silver Age comic book come to life, yeah, where there are, in those comic books, one kabillion things going on at all times, and they're throwing out insane ideas all the time. And that's clearly what it was inspired by. To answer your question explicitly, I think it was probably the most comic book coded movie since Ang Lee's Hulk was my takeaway.
Wow, nice.
Which is also, like, I haven't watched recently, mind you, but like a very underrated movie that very specifically is like, I'm a comic book on screen. And this also was very much a comic book on screen. I'm sure that's cool. Not what you were getting at, but that
not
was
not what I was getting at, but I love the connection, because I do think there's a, this is reaching deep into the brain, this movie, to hit on what tonally it's matching for me anyway. Pete, did you have a movie that this like reminded you of?
It's a weird question, because I liked him saying Hulk, because Hulk was kind of garbage too, so I kind of liked that. He answered it, but it was also a shot. I don't know. I don't remember seeing a movie that felt this herky-jerky. Maybe Tank Girl? I don't know. I'm trying to think of like...
Great call. See, that's where I'm going too. This reminded me the most, and it hit me watching it, of Mystery Men.
Interesting. Mm.
The like not much loved comic book movie, but that movie had the same like madcap way of being like, let's just do all this, let's mix tones, let's have it be wild and funny at points, deeply emotional at other points, dealing with big things, wearing its sort of like messaging on its sleeve. And yeah, there's definitely some criticisms that we can hit on here, but I think in general it just really aimed at originality and hit it in a way that I think is very refreshing in this comic book movie space.
I would like to start talking positive about it. And I do think that, like, knowing James Gunn's work, this was impressive in the fact that I didn't feel like I was watching Guardians. I didn't feel like I was watching, you know, his Suicide Squad or anything like that. It felt different. I didn't feel like, you know, there was emotional beats where I was like, oh, James Gunn, you big softy. But I think it's impressive when you see a movie by a director that you're very familiar with. Excuse me while I lose my voice.
Too much Pez.
That you're kind of impressed by how surprised you are. You know what I mean? So to his credit, I wasn't like, oh, this is a classic gun movie, or you know what I mean? I didn't get any of that.
Well, I think there were definitely notes of James Gunn in there. Like you were getting at, like nice the Mr. Terrific fight scene was pretty much, and I was curious to hear your take on this, Justin. It was pretty much the Yondu in the woods fight from Guardians 2.
Like, shot the same way. The camera movement was super similar, where you're just following the action but missing a lot of it from the perspective of a bystander. But that I like this fight better. Still good. I actually like this fight better because it gave him a moment to shine. It put us with Lois in a really hard way, which we, you know, the character perspective, you bounce around a ton here, and that may be some of the jarring feelings you guys are talking about. I don't mind it mostly, but it was nice to sort of be with her in this place that was one of the like more fraught scenes, was like going into this portal. And the sort of the darkest path the movie followed was began with that sequence into that whole Proton River thing.
I
think that, yes, it definitely called to mind. Was that what you were getting at, Justin? The movie was pixels that you were trying to get?
That's what I'm always trying to find my next pixels.
Pixels to when is my big question. Mm. That scene, that fight scene, was very James Gunn coded. The other thing, the opposite end of the spectrum, to keep talking about what Pete's talking about, that was very James Gunn coded, is after Superman is done fighting the engineer and she's unconscious, when he pulls the nanites out of his throat and it's like gross and vomity, that also goes very much back to like James Gunn's horror past with Slither and other things. So that came out there. And then the one other moment that was very James Gunn, I felt, was when Luther hands the Bravian leader, who I'm blanking on the name of right now, a donut, and is like, you gotta try this donut. It's very offhand. Yeah. Like, that's sort of like weird, quirky, offhand humor in the middle of everything else feels very James Gunn to me as well.
Looked like a great donut.
if we want to talk generalities, I do want to start with like the big one, or big three, actually, that I thought was really good. David Corenswet as Superman, Rachel Brosnahan as Lois Lane, Nicholas Hoult as Lex Luthor, all great, I thought.
Yes. I'll agree.
Lois was great. I thought Miss Maisel killed it. Lex, I like the choices that he was making, you know what I mean? But I'm old school Gene Hackman Lex Luthor, you know what I mean?
Here's the thing. He's not. Gene Hackman, great. Not a great Luther.
How dare you?
How dare you?
Mr. Spooker! Come on, he's great, and he's incomparable in that movie.
It's hard to really compare those.
This is actually, like we're talking comic booky, the way Nicholas Hoult plays it is the arrogant Lex from the comic books. And it's not just the look, it's like little choices that he does, the way that he twitches his lip at certain point and sneers.
He's too intense for me. He's too evil. I like my Lex who, like, when the things go bad, he's going to turn into Superman Lex. You know what I mean? Where he's going to be a good guy.
Oh, you missed the purple and green suit. That's what you wanted.
Oh, yeah. Come on, man.
I don't want that. Like, I like that the movie stuck with Lex. You know, they say this explicitly in the script, but like brain versus brawn, that he is using his brain versus brawn. Ultimately, Superman waffly kind of uses his brain to solve the problem, I guess. But ultimately, that's what he's pushing forward. Also, they're clearly gesturing pretty hard towards tech billionaires like Elon Musk here in terms of the social media monkeys driving things up, getting involved tangentially.
I think I heard that's true, by the way.
What? That the monkeys run social media?
Yeah.
Well, certainly when it seems like most of the time.
Oh, right. Come on, dude. Nice. How dare you?
I mean, come on.
I'm not insulting you, listener at home.
No, it's me. I'm talking about me.
Alex is.
Alex has been very mysteriously buying a lot of bananas that he's bringing somewhere in his basement lately. Yes. It's like a Donkey Kong Country cutscene.
But I thought it was a fantastic performance. That's my point.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQBar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter. Hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
First, there was Tuesday. Then, there was Taco Tuesday. Now at Wendy's, there's Takis Tuesday. Get a new Takis Fuego meal, a.k.a. Takis Fuego chicken sandwich, Fuego fries inspired by Takis, a bag of Takis Fuego chips, a small drink, and also a small Frosty classic. Yes, you can get that any day, but on Takis Tuesday, the Frosty is free. Make every Tuesday a Takis Tuesday. Gotta be Wendy's.
Limited time only. Participating U.S. Wendy's includes 1 ounce Takis Fuego chips while supplies last. Takis and Fuego trademarks are used under license.
I agree, and like it is, I feel like we can't do the Gene Hackman style Luthor anymore. We've just moved too far beyond
that,
a villainous type character. And like when you're having a Superman that is so modern, powerful, and like so human, I guess, which is the point of the movie, I think you need someone to be huge in the evil and be way ahead of Superman for most of the movie, what they do here. And I think we've seen a lot of tech billionaire as bad guy. What I thought they did really well here with the writing and the performance of Lex is he did both sides of it. He did the big, like, obnoxious, soulless tech billionaire that you see in, like, a Mountain Head. But also he had the weakness on his sleeve at the end in his speech about, like, envy and trusting in the data above anything a human could ever do. And Superman wins because of his trust in himself and those around him.
His humanity, which his humanity was great.
And I just love all of that. And this is touching on something else, but yes, Elon Musk is a cop, but getting into the politics of the movie, which is, I was very surprised by how much politics there is. This has been an issue since the movie has come out. But I feel like this Luther was very Stephen Miller, the horrifying White House guy.
Yeah.
And that is strong choice. I like the choice. I think it is a way of combining two sides of evil in our modern world.
I hear what you're saying. I mean, I want to kind of stay on the positives, but just because we're talking along this path, one of my major problems with the movie, and I know they can't do this. I understand Warner Brothers Discovery can't do this, but I think they muddy the waters a lot in terms of what they are saying by not choosing a path. Like, specifically, we have Bravia and Jaranpur, right? Two fictional countries who are very lightly from DC Comics. I think they've appeared each in like two comics each or something like that.
Might be more.
And Bravia is always just like generic Eastern European country. And Jaranpur, at least in the comics, is like generic, been around for 3,000 years, mystical city that nobody knew about that always pops up that has like ethnicity. And that's pretty much it. Like, it's just like, I don't know, could be anywhere. We're not going to say specific. The way that they set it up, though, and the way that they shoot it is Bravia is an Eastern European country. Perhaps even, you know, you could extrapolate Russia or something like that. And it's bordered on what seems to be a Middle Eastern country, which is Jaranpur. And you just got to cross from this Eastern European country to this Middle Eastern country, which a lot of folks online have said, like, oh, Bravia is explicitly Israel and Jaranpur is explicitly Palestine. It's not. And this is, I think, part of the problem is, like, if they had dove into it, that would have been a hornet's nest and it would have been tricky.
Yes.
And
well, that's why they didn't.
Why they didn't. But because they have kind of Russia invading kind of Gaza, it ends up, in my opinion, kind of being nothing because of that. It's more just like, you know what you should do in these situations is be good, period. And that's fine. But as a viewer, I want to see something that is a little more focused and a little more explicit, even while I understand from the business perspective why they can't do that.
Well, but I also think, like, you can't, if you want to touch on those issues without having to do what you're saying, get into those issues, which this movie would should never do, would never, no one really wants to do that in a comic book escapist story like this. So, like, but to touch on the idea and have it be about, if you want your movie to be about something that is very prescient to people and literally happening in the world around you, I feel like you have to do something that gets you there emotionally, even if you're not using the actual specifics. So that's where I feel like they were able to do a good job of touching on sort of these things without getting caught up in the mire of it, which felt right for me in this movie.
I hear you, but this also ties into the problem that I was expressing at the beginning in terms of the jumbledness. It's not just about like hitting us with anti-proton rivers and social media monkeys and all of these things. It's the fact that thematically it is tackling so many different things at the same time. It's tackling whatever the MAGA people outside are saying. Like, Superman isn't an immigrant, right? He comes from another planet. He is an alien. There's a lot going on there that we should also get into in terms of the changes in his heritage, because that's a major theme of the movie in terms of family. And that ultimately is the thing that they're trying to pay off at the end. But there's also being a good man in a complicated world that I do think is complicated by the fact that he has been operative for 3 years. So what changes during the movie for him personally a little bit, but for everybody else, it's not, in my opinion, clear exactly what. And at the same time, they're like, Russia is invading Gaza, and also there's Elon Musk is manipulating social media, or maybe some other tech billionaire. So again, a lot of different ideas, but because they are capturing or trying to capture all of these themes, I don't think they successfully complete or explore any of them.
I mean, I do think that may be intentional, because that's what it feels like to live in this world / America right now, where you're constantly bombarded by these issues are so top of mind. And, you know, this movie wasn't written this week. So, like, the fact that they were able to touch on these things that are still very present, perhaps even more so now, feels like that's a hard magic trick to pull off. And I think the rush of all of that gets back to the idea of what it's like to just try to be a human now, and how we are able to do that when we're constantly bombarded by, assaulted by news from these different buckets that they're talking about here. That's why I feel like this movie was about being sort of a modern human, even American, to get more specific. Well, now.
Go ahead, Pete. Sorry.
No, I just wanted to kind of say one of the things I really liked in this movie was Superman's humanity. Him talking about what makes him great or a good person is his humanity, is his human side. And the fact that he embraces it, I thought was a nice kind of thing to have Superman talking about. You know what I mean? So, yeah, I just wanted to jump in there.
Well, let's explicitly talk about that, because they we have the plot line of he has half of this message from Jor-El and Lara, right?
Talking about Bradley Cooper?
Yep, Bradley Cooper and Lady from Westworld give him half a message in Kryptonian that he finds very soothing. It's telling him to be a good person and come to Earth. But it's this classic, like, you're an, I mean, in the opposite direction, but like, isn't it a Simpsons joke where it's like you, no, it's on a critic where they're like, you awful, terrible, oh no, it is the Simpsons, you awful, terrible, no. Wonderful man.
Yeah.
It's Mo Sizlak. Yes, there you go. Anyway, like, but that's the message that they're giving them, and ultimately the engineer unfurls it. So the second part of the message is to be like, be a good man and do that by taking over the world and gain as many wives as you possibly can. So Kryptonians, which Kryptonian culture in the comic books is always about like genetic superiority, but Jor-El and Lara are usually separated from that. They're the people who are the good people in the world, who send Superman off to be a good people. He's found by the Kents, who are also good people, and raise him to be good. But the movie is like, nope. His heritage is not what makes him good. There's that speech from Pa Kent about it that he gives. It's ultimately about what you do that makes you good, and that's the takeaway that Superman has. So there's a lot of different pieces to break down there. The main thing for the comic book perspective, I'm curious to hear from you guys, how did you feel? Excuse me, now I'm getting choked up.
Yeah, you're getting emotional, bro.
I'm getting
too
very
much Pez.
It's too much Pez.
Or not enough, maybe.
Yeah.
I'll get some Pez after we're done with the podcast, and I'll feel much better.
Yeah, you will.
How do you feel about this change to Superman's Kryptonian heritage?
Yeah, it was kind of crazy. And also, like, the fact that, you know, something you kind of talked about in the movie where we learn this information. He has this message that he is very protective of. His place gets broken into. They change it or discover new parts of it, which wasn't clear. So I didn't know at the end if his parents
were... Can I insert there? Because I have seen some questions online. I think they are very explicit about the fact that it is 100% true. Mr. Terrific says that. They're like, nope, no way they could have changed it. Just to make it 100% explicit, Luther didn't tweak it. They didn't alter the footage. That was the message from Jor-El and Lara.
Yeah, they made sure they told us a couple times during the movie, but still it's like, oh, well, if Lex Luthor is on the up and up, I believe it. You know what I mean? If he says he didn't touch it.
Are you going to do your own independent research on this, Pete?
No, I'm just saying it's, you know, as much as I would like to, it still felt a little odd.
They told you
like,
in the text. They told you in the text.
Whatever, dude. I'm just saying you broke in, you've discovered something that Superman couldn't unlock and then made it great. And then you're like, oh, it's all true. It's like, okay, all right, bro.
The crazy thing with this is the movie did tell us multiple times, but they told us, like the media, it tells us stuff that makes a lot of people believe conspiracy theories. Because they didn't actually show us it happened off screen, and then people said it was definitely true.
Yeah.
And I was
like, just supposed to,
Because I agree with you, Alex. We're meant to know that it is true, and it's a much better story if it's true. But I was like, oh, just show them doing it on screen so we don't have to do it this way.
You're
making a mistake here.
Because it's like the whole movie, I'm still wondering about it, and then it's like, it's never really. But I did really like the Kents. At first I was like, oh, it's a different choice, but their acting really moved me, and I liked them.
Oh, those bunch of hayseeds.
Yeah, pizza hayseed. Now easy, he was weed whacking this morning with a hayseed, no doubt, in his mouth. And
I don't
Pete,
know about
like Pa Kent, is a mush.
Yeah,
he's a mush.
I don't mind his dad being a mush. And I even thought the scene of Ma Kent like talking into the phone very loudly.
So
that's fun. Yeah. But all of the dialogue from them was like, I don't know. I didn't buy any of
you
that.
Don't
like
have
it was way
parents
too
that
like
ramble
it felt
on?
Like. No, there was something about the level of the dialogue that felt like sketch comedy level rather than acting.
Take it easy, Elephant Lady.
I'm with you, Alex, because I agree. I really liked, the casting choice to make the L's be celebs that we never see hardly at all. You know, and we never actually see them interact, just this one recording. And then have the Kents be less famous actors, people we don't really know. I thought that was really smart. It really hit on sort of the this like Americana vibe that I think James Gunn is going for here. And the only thing is, it felt like someone had never been to the country writing their dialogue. And I was like, oh man, you went so far to make this feel more authentic. Have someone who works on a farm come in for one day, thank them right next to Tom King in the credits for their country advisor, and have them write the dialogue like normal people speak. Because it was like is this thing on? I'm a ham radio operator. And I was just like, come on, guys. Let's have corn cakes again. It was like, no.
It was hee-haw level is basically what was going on with them. I will say, just as a little note before I forget, because this really struck me in the Ked scene, but I think it's true across the board. I appreciated the fact that everybody in this movie lived in real places. Like the Kent's house did not feel, as much as I love the Kent house on, say, Superman and Lois or whatever, it's always clearly like, this is a set so we could shoot around it. The Kent's house, like, they had a very thin living room, which I was like, oh, that's kind of hard to shoot in with big movie cameras and stuff, but I appreciate it was a real apartment.
Yes.
Lois's apartment felt real. When they briefly cut to Hawkgirl's apartment and Metamorpho's apartment as well, I was like, these are all real places that people actually live versus the palatial things that people usually live in, which I thought was cool.
And it's funny because it's a super small thing. Like it's actually much more work for them to film in those places, like you're saying, Alex, rather than in a studio on a set. But like it adds so much authenticity to it, even when we're talking about the little bit of nonsense. And just to make a comparison, because I feel like even through all of this, Zack Snyder's Superman is still getting a lot of like, well, that was good too. And if you compare the Pa Kent in that movie, Kevin Costner, who was like, let the tornado take me, and this Pa Kent, who is just like perhaps a little broad in his like conversation about living in the country, I'll take this a million times out of a million.
Well, that brings up like a little bit of a side conversation that I've been thinking about quite a bit with the comparison between the two movies is, why do we have to make one or the other set of Superman's parents bad? Like, why can't they both be good? I don't know.
Well, I think he has to make a decision. And what I liked about that is, I think that, you know, people who, you know, and I don't know, but I know my father was adopted. This kind of, who am I? You know what I mean? Like, am I, you know, my past, or am I the people who raised me? It's a tough identity thing.
Yeah.
So I did like that struggle. And I think of him, you know, being an alien and trying to, you know, be the last Kryptonian and all that kind of shit, even though very casually, you know, his cousin shows up as a drunk, which I was like, Jesus Christ, you know.
That was a wild.
That was fucking crazy. Sure. That was crazy. I was like, what the? That was a real emotional roller coaster where you're like, yay. And then you're like, oh no, that's what we're doing.
That's okay. She parties.
Anyways. Yeah, I party too. It's a phase people go through. It's a whole thing. But I'm just saying, like, that's not her whole personality. There was so many great comics about her. Just to have her.
Yeah,
kind
I wish
of
we had a movie we could explore that in. But
exactly. or a comic book as well.
Yeah, a couple of great comic books.
I love what you're saying though, Pete, about the nature of Superman, because I think that was the point. I think the reason you make the L's like imperialistic. It's because it makes Superman's humanity his choice.
Right.
And it was him being here on Earth that made him into this person. And I think getting into a larger theme of the movie, like, anyone can make a choice to be a better person. You can have made a million mistakes up to this point in your life. You can be in a place of, like, where everyone around you is not nice. And you can still make the right choice to be a better person. I think that is the most, like, populist theme of way of presenting this theme that this movie does.
It's the old Colossus, like four or five, you know, all you need is four or five great moments. You know what I mean?
Oh, from Deadpool?
Yep.
Yeah. The It is interesting, just to sort of wrap up this part of the discussion, but to throw something else out there at the end, that Snyder is like, no, Superman is alien, and Gunn is like, no, Superman is human. I will say, personally, I was very affected by his human, I take one step every day, I make mistakes like everybody else. I thought that speech was very well written. However, I have seen some pushback online about this plot point, specifically the idea of Superman rejecting his immigrant heritage in favor of humanity, that ties in a certain way into great replacement theory and other very like toxic theories out there. I don't know. I don't necessarily have a strong take on it. You don't think so, Justin?
That's pushing. I don't think the movie is trying to tell us to read that way mm-hmm. into it. It's, to me, it's like, It's him making a choice. It's not he's not rejecting his parents because of his choice. He's rejecting their ideas. The way mm-hmm. that a lot of people leave behind the negative things that they have in their lives to go do something else. Like, it didn't feel, it felt like part of the immigrant story.
I could understand the point that people would be making online of like, you shouldn't, you know, you should be proud of your heritage and stuff like that. But I think in Superman's specific scenario, he was trying to lean more into the things that he likes, which is his humanity, and, you know, trying to be better than his parents on a different planet. And
he's,
I think,
still
that
wearing
the
S.
Yeah, I'm not saying that, saying you should, you know, denounce anything, but it is about our own path that you have to choose how you want to walk. You know, mm-hmm. you can't be like your parents. Otherwise you might turn into a movie critic who nobody wants to hang out with and see
all
movies
right.
with.
All you right. Hey, lay off my son, man. Wow. You Pez eater.
Well, it's interesting because you will throw your kids under the bus for a bit, but if somebody else does, okay, it's good to know
that's
that.
True of a lot like, of, yeah, that's true of a lot of parenting things where the parent can do that and you can't. Right. Yep.
That makes sense.
So as a thing, like, so yeah. like spanking, for instance.
Whoa. Yeah, I want to throw out another aspect of the movie that I really liked a lot, which is the Daily Planet. I thought, with some yeah. exceptions there are some cast members which I'm like, why are you there? Like Cat Grant got nothing to do. She's
truly
literally just standing.
It was fun to see her. It's
I
like,
guess.
Hey, Cat.
Did you also like seeing Ron Troop, the other guy that they invited?
The SNL guy?
No. Is he on SNL?
No. You're thinking of Beck Bennett, who was...
Beck Bennett, yeah.
Yeah,
he was
Beck
fun.
Bennett is on there. But when they invite people on the trip, they invite Kat, Lois, Steve Lombard, Jimmy, yeah. Perry, and they're like, oh, also you, Ron Troop, come, who I assume had a bigger part at some point in the movie.
Yeah.
He's the politics reporter, but...
Yeah.
Just as if, like, what? Who are you?
I wonder if the movie had even more over... politics to it at a point, and they were like, we have to cut this back.
Yeah.
Because that the cast of that ship, I was like, oh man, there's clearly a lot going on in this movie that was cut. Because there's no reason to have half of them are there.
But I did like how integrated they were in the plot. I thought all the stuff with Jimmy was really
Jimmy
fun.
Was great.
Really
that was
fun.
I don't great like Jimmy Olsen as a character. That was my favorite Jimmy Olsen.
Skylar Zagando, great. And it was, like, to the comic book nature, Jimmy just being this inexplicable chick magnet is baked into the concept from the comic books. I think Skylar Zagando played it well. I do have some issues also with how the movie treated some of its female characters. But I thought his little smile at the end when... oh my God, what's the character's name?
Eve
is like, we're going to be together forever, where he's like, huh? All right. It was kind of nice. That was a nice way of tying that up. I thought that the reporting that they were doing, this really struck me in particular, because you never see this in movies. You always see in movies, journalism is like, to use a specific example, Man of Steel, where Clark is the sports reporter. And he's like, nah, I'm going to pursue this Bat in Gotham story. And Perry's like, you can't do that. And he's like, too late. Already published it on the front page of the paper, bro. And Perry's like, ooh, I'll get you next time, Clark. Here, the fact that they took a moment to be like, okay, we're going to walk you through the story, Perry. Perry's going to ask some questions about it. We're going to explain our sourcing and how we backed it up and how we did the reporting. They go on the ship and then Lois dictates the story to Jimmy, him writing it out, taking a moment to hand the story to Perry to do an edit on the story, handing it back to Jimmy, and then I know you guys are going to laugh at this, but I was really
shocked. I know what you're talking about.
They press the three buttons on the CMS where they do, like, I think it's copy ready, print ready, and then publish. Which is how CMS actually works versus the, like, automatically publish live thing that they have in every movie. I was like, it's such a relatively for a movie unnecessary thing to put it there, but the fact that they took the time to make it that, and then also ultimately it's the Daily Planet are the people who beat Lex Luthor, not Superman or Mr. Terrific, I thought was great. I loved all of that.
Wow. What was it like cheering for that CMS
moment?
Yeah, exactly.
You're like, two extra buttons! I'm finally seeing!
At the press screening, dead silence until that moment.
And then just everyone throwing their hats in the air.
We did it! A banner dropped that said, we did it. Wow. It's crazy.
Really good. Wow. Mission accomplished. I do agree with you, though. I loved all of these characters. I love the movie is dedicated to them. They're the core. And I think, again, that's like the understanding of the Superman comic book world translated to screen in a smart way works because it works in the comic book format. And we haven't said this yet, but this movie is so all-star Superman and in down to the bones of all of this. So, like, I feel like if you for some reason have enjoyed this movie and haven't read that comic is like the text of what you saw on screen. So definitely go run out and read that.
Well, let me throw out something that to tie it to the All-Star Superman thing. So that the plot of that book is Superman finds out that he's dying and he completes 12 labors just like Hercules before he dies to make the world a better place. But it's very like modular because of that. I don't know if this is true, and I really should have looked into it before the podcast, but I had read somewhere that apparently one version of this movie had day separators on it. Like, it started Monday, then went Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, basically being like, this is a crazy week in the life of Superman. And that really stuck with me while I was watching the movie. That's something that I think actually might have helped if they left it in, because they do clearly have, like, this happens on this day, then it's the next day, and this happens here. And to really drive home the idea that, like, this week is insane. This is a crazy week.
Yeah, when they're talking the monsters in the background.
Yeah, I think might have actually been a plus for the movie, frankly.
Yeah, it was it was hard to focus, though, because I was having a hard time listening to what Superman was saying while there was that battle going on in the background. Because it looked like Green Lantern just had a big bat that he made and was
That is my second favorite scene of the movie.
I love that scene, too. Really cool.
This ties into the other thing that I wanted to say that I loved is I thought Lois and Clark in this movie was absolute fire.
H-O-T. Love this.
Lois being like,
crushing it.
Yo, you don't want to do an interview with me. Him being like, oh, yeah, I could handle it. It was
that whole scene was hands
down. She ripped him apart.
My favorite scene of the movie.
And I mean, it's
so good. Just
it's perfect.
Two people talking, the blocking in it, the build of it, the dialogue, the way that they nailed the differences between Lois and Clark, and also working, obviously, Superman into there. Apparently, I think that was the first scene they did, because Rachel Brosnahan was like, yeah, we made out for 4 hours, which was a good introduction to figure out our chemistry on set. So, great. That whole scene.
4 hours. That's a long time to make out, man.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Chapstick.
Yeah, you got to keep those lips plump and fresh. The way that that scene just crystallizes each character, and you know Clark, you know Superman's fucked the minute they start that scene.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought that was such a smart way to flip the dynamic and make him bad at so many things first was really great. And I feel like Rachel Brosnahan is getting so much positive hype on this, and she deserves it. She's excellent in it. But David Corn-Sweat is great. This is so hard to do, to be this, like, golden retriever, goofy, like, oafy Superman, and have him still be able to deliver those big lines at the end of the movie and still, like, be the fighter we're rooting for. I thought this was one of the hardest tasks I've seen in a superhero movie. It's like the opposite of the Marvel formula, which I'm not saying I hate. I love that too, but the quick talking, always ahead of everybody move, like he's behind everyone basically this whole movie. And to have that be the hero, it's just an amazing feat, I feel like.
It's almost, not to keep slagging off this thing, but it's almost the opposite of the pod Ma Kent, where I buy when he's like, ah, geez, I really screwed up here.
Exactly, yes.
Yeah, he's great. He's fantastic. And that scene and the subsequent scene that Pete hated within an inch of his life, when it's not Solaris in the background, the Rogue Sun, which was surprising, yeah. But it's actually, I guess, Mr. Mizoplisic, because they call out that it's a fifth dimensional imp. But them fighting in the background, I thought was a beautiful scene. And that's a great scene, too. Which is just, again, like mostly just dialogue between the two of them as they're figuring out their relationship. I thought it was wonderful. And the last one that I'll throw out there, just to end that little triptych, that scene at the end after they finish the main fight and Lois and Clark run up to each other, they're like, would you like to have an interview over here? I thought was so adorable, good. So well done, so romantic. That flying kiss was so good. I'm so already good. In the tag for Lois and Clark, but I thought this was just like top tier example of it.
Yeah, I feel like they in a movie where there's so much happening, they were able to take those quiet moments with them and make them just really work. And, you know, that's all. Sometimes that's all it takes. We're with this couple, you know, three, four times. And then we just see the camera slowly levitate along with them. I just thought it was a super smart way to do that.
Yeah, I didn't hate that scene. I was just saying it was distracting. And I felt like for a lot of this movie, that scene is kind of like there's so much going on and we're not getting enough information about background things. So it was, I think you're right. It was powerful and beautiful for the two of them. But I was like, oh, it looks like Green Lantern's got a big bat. And then what are the others doing? And I'm not listening to what's
you
happening.
You wanted to be on the, in the action. Yeah, well, the point was you're not always with the superhero stuff. Sometimes you're with the people.
But at least give me a Guy Gardner afterwards being like, hey, that was close. We got Mixel Black or like, whatever,
to keep bringing back to this, but this is where I think like the day markers might have helped, because the implication I took for that scene is like, yeah, this stuff happens all the time. Like sometimes yes. There's a fifth dimensional end, sometimes there's a giant kaiju attacking, sometimes there's a big portal that's ripping a hole in the city. It's just like every day is a new crazy thing that happens in Metropolis. We just got to roll and deal with it and go on with their lives at the same time. So I hear you, but I appreciated the way that scene played out, because you got the moment of him hitting with the baseball bat, which was very funny, and then it settles to just like this beautiful lighting in the background while they're having the conversation in the foreground.
Yeah, but they're fighting for their lives. You know what I mean? It's not as beautiful.
They
died.
They actually died. They could have all died. Let's talk about some of the supporting characters, because there's a lot of folks in here. I know top tier character for my son, but curious to hear how you feel. I feel like he's the big breakout of the movie, Edie Gathegi as Mr. Terrific. What'd you think?
I thought it was great. I thought he got to be both the sort of cold analytical antithesis to Superman, but also he got to push through that and be emotional by the end of it, which I think helped us like be aware of the stakes being raised. And he was like, oh no, this is really awful. I was like, really? I was like, oh, I believe him. And I thought his fight sequence, like we said, was really cool. Gave him a little bit of juice. The post-credit sequence, I was like, I don't know about this, but sure. Really cemented him as someone who's going to be with Superman a lot, it felt like, as his, like, you know, opposite.
Yeah, they're kind of, yeah, exactly. I like that.
The Laurel and Hardy vibe?
Yeah, the odd couple of him being very cold and kind of manipulating as far as numbers and being, like, very methodical, and then Superman kind of being the what do we do, you know, kind of thing. So I like Mr. Terrific. He's a great actor. I've seen him in a ton of stuff. Always impressed with his work. I just felt like I was like, we already have Cyborg. That's this like cold, kind of methodical, kind of numbers are the most important thing. Where I was like, I would love to see more of this character. I've seen him do amazing things in comics where I just wanted like it to feel like a different character, like other than one we've seen.
I felt it was very different, honestly. Like the whole just dismissiveness throughout, the ego on him that actually is well deserved, I thought was fun. Little things like, come on, I'm goddamn Mr. Terrific. Very funny.
Yeah.
The stop fooling around already thing after he beats Ultraman, I thought was fun as well. And also, even like the bits like, I don't know, there was like a little thing, but after Lois goes and talks to the Justice Gang in the Hall of Justice, when he comes outside, the way that he's sort of like putting on his jacket as he comes out was very funny. Like it was a bit of physical comedy, followed by the garage door opener joke, which also was very
fun.
The biggest joke swing in a movie I've seen in a while. And it was, I thought it worked, but I was like, whew, ooh, this is sweaty. This is a joke. This is a hard joke.
Sitting in it, I was like, there's so many things happening in this movie. This is what we're doing. It kind of reminded me of the squirrel moment where I was just like,
no, that's great. I'm all in on the squirrel moment. That was, to me, that was such a specific, I know we're jumping to somewhere else now, but like that was such a specific rejoinder to the crowd that for decades now has been like, why do we need this hero to save a cat from a tree? And that to me was so clearly James Gunn being like, I'm gonna have him save a girl, a dog, and then not only that, a squirrel. And just like really diving out on, no, this is who my Superman is.
It was just a tough conversation. It was like, oh, my grandma died, but I'm glad that squirrel got saved. You know what I mean?
No, he saved everybody. Like, that was so clear in the shot where he slowly lays the kaiju down on the park and makes sure he's not hitting anybody. Pete, are you getting at the deaths in the movie? Is that what you're going to bring up?
Yeah, I felt like, you know, that there was so much chaos and so many, you know what I mean? Like, I don't think
you're writing things around the edge of the scenes that didn't necessarily happen. I think that's what you're kind of doing. I did, to contrast, and then I want to get back to like kind of talking down the cast list a little bit. But by contrast, I was bothered by some of the deaths in the movie. It felt a little like having their cake and eating it too. Like, you have a Superman who very clearly is like, I'm going to save everybody I absolutely can, including squirrels. But at the same time, Mr. Terrific kills the kaiju, and Superman's reaction is like, oh man, ah, bummer. Well, anyway, move on. Let's see if these kids are okay. Then they kill the falafel guy, which is a shocking, horrifying moment.
That was harshest rough, part of the movie. Yeah.
Very harsh. And not that Superman physically could have saved that guy at that moment, but the fact that they wrote that there, to me, that felt like they were really edging on the next snap for Man of Steel for me, just in terms of feeling there.
Sure, yeah.
And then at the end of the movie,
wait, can we talk about that for a second? Yeah. Because I think it was like, it was a big downbeat in the movie, purposefully put there, I think, to just show Superman at his weakest and lowest, and he can't save the person he wants to. But I also think it was important to have that as the sort of biggest evil, the way that people, villains in our real world now, take advantage, like, don't care who gets killed to or gets hurt to get to their ends. That felt like a sort of a way to do that sharp and quick and make us feel the way we maybe feel on a day-to-day basis sometimes in the real world. So like seeing that the movie with kids, I was like, oh God, I can't believe that just happened here. But I do think the fact that it was just a single dark point right there was good for the shape of the movie.
Yeah, I have thought about this, but I haven't necessarily like explicated how I feel about this. I do think there's also something about the fact that the man was a Middle Eastern man who was killed that is potentially dicey, but I don't want to speak to that as a white man who is not Middle Eastern. So curious to hear what anybody thinks.
Speak to the personal emotional idea, but like, as from a political standpoint, I felt like that was the most Stephen Miller I was feeling about Lex Luthor, where he was like, I don't care about these people. This is an immigrant. I'll kill this person to just get a piece of information out of Superman. Like, that's all he wanted there. He wasn't even, so like, it felt like the most, one of the bigger political moments in the movie.
The other death that I was going to throw out there is Hawkgirl killing the leader of Boravia, which to me, that was the moment where I was like, I don't know about this one. And that ties into another thing that was a little dicey to me about the movie, is what exactly Superman did over the course of it. By which I mean, like, what if Superman has been around for 3 years and been good this entire time and everybody knows he's good? Obviously, he's wrestling a bit with the message from his parents throughout the movie, but what changed in terms of how he is inspiring very specifically the Justice Gang, very specifically Green Lantern and Hawkgirl, that led to them getting involved in this conflict? We get little notes of it, but specifically we see Green Lantern eating his Fruity Pebbles and watching the footage on TV of a kid in Jaranpur. We see Hawkgirl washing her hair and doing the same. But it felt to me like, to preserve the surprise of, haha, they're getting involved in the conflict, there was a scene missing there that showed what had changed with them because of Superman.
Yeah, I agree with you. That was definitely the bit of the muddiest part for me. Like that Hawkgirl, like killing the leader. I was like, oh, I don't. This doesn't feel like, to your point, like they were inspired to act on behalf of Superman, yet they killed a person, something Superman would never do. So it was like, okay. And it was just a little confusing. I also feel like the movie was telling us so hard that Superman was going to go and stop the conflict there, because that's what he had done before the movie started. It felt like the kids with the flag. I was like, it has to be Superman that saves
them. It has to be. He had the flag.
And then it wasn't. And I was like, and he's like, I'm a hero. I called my friends. It was like, well, yeah, but like, and we could all do that.
Hey, kid, I know you want Superman, but guess what? You got an upgrade. I was like, doesn't feel like an upgrade.
Well, and that move moment also came so soon after Superman being like, brains over brawn. I know how to solve this problem. Crypto, kill this guy.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, that's also not brains over brawn.
Yes, right. But I'll give it to Superman, who is... has the movie built in the idea that he's wrong a lot. So like, I'm like, that's fine. Cause it was really, friends over Braun.
That whole section of the movie to me was weird, including, and I know we're jumping all over the place, but including the Ultraman reveal, which at least to me was pretty obvious from the beginning. That's fine.
Yeah.
Like, I think they telegraphed that pretty effectively, but talking again about themes, there's something to be said about like Superman fighting against his self and his heritage, but I don't think they drew any sort of line there with the Ultraman reveal.
I thought for sure they were going to, too. It was felt so clear to me. It was like, oh, here's a Superman without humanity. Mm-hmm. Oh, you're not going to say that here? This is at the end of the movie. It's about him being a human.
I thought it was going to be like a Bizarro kind of thing.
I thought Bizarro for a while, too. And then I was struck by just how like black noir from The Boys this whole plot point was. But that's cool, because isn't that in the comic as well?
Well, Ultraman is the evil Superman from, I always get this wrong, Earth 3, where the crime syndicate is. It might be Earth 2 if it is Earth 2.
I think it's Earth 2.
Earth. It was, I think, originally Earth 3, and then they changed it to Earth 3. Doesn't matter. Whatever. He is there, but also Lex Luthor does cloning a lot. Like, he combined his genes with Superman's genes to make Connor Kent, who was initially supposed to be an evil Superboy, but turned out to be good. It's all comic book based. It's fine. And I think like we can get into theories here, I guess, a little bit. But one of my kids asked me, they're like, wow, wasn't it weird that they killed Ultraman? And I do think they went to lengths to say that if you end up in a black hole, you don't die. You're just trapped in there. So given like that, I think they are getting into some sort of multiverse thing. I think Ultraman has the possibility of coming back with some sort of crime syndicate or something like that, potentially at some point.
I don't want any more of the Polly Pocket dimension stuff moving forward.
They set it up, though. There's a throwaway line from Lex Luthor where when he's explaining his portals, he says, I found a pocket between the two universes.
Yeah.
So there are already two universes. We're in the DCU. There is another universe, something that apparently they're going to explore more in the upcoming season of Peacemaker. But that is the whole plot that they're doing.
Great.
Sorry, Pete.
Well, let's see. I feel like they may shy away from multiverse, given we've all had too much.
We don't like it.
Yeah.
All right, let's get back to the cast and talk about that, because there's still plenty of folks to talk about. Anthony Carrigan as Metamorpho. I love Anthony Carrigan. I do not think they used him enough.
No. I was upset when I found out after the movie that was my guy. I was like, oh, my God. And, you know, it speaks to his acting that I didn't even know it was him and amazing makeup. But I was like, I would have loved him.
I don't know if it's the acting so much as covered in stuff.
Yeah, it was hard to see him at all. And, like, yes, not really well used for the talent in the actor, but I liked Metamorpho's role in the movie. I thought it was cool. I think we'll see him again in the future. We'll get
his
more.
His turn was good. It was nice to see that happen.
He also led to, I think my favorite line in the movie is when Lois and Mr. Terrific are trying to get them out of the portal, and Mr. Terrific is like, I found four of them, and Lois is like, four, and he's like, yeah, Superman, a dog in a cape, a green baby, and a squiggle man.
Which, squiggle man, definitely. Squiggle man. I laughed out loud to an empty, quiet theater at that point.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Squiggle man is great. Nathan Fillion as Guy Gardner. How do we feel about that?
He plays a great douche.
Yeah.
You seem reserved, Justin.
There's something that bothered me about the use of Guy Gardner here, it felt the most sort of like, it was a little sketchy, to use what you mentioned earlier. Like, it felt like he's the obnoxious guy. And I wanted a little bit more depth to it so I could enjoy the obnoxious part more, maybe. Guy Gardner also, like, the haircut just, it doesn't work in the real world. I think it looks too dumb. Guy Gardner looks sort of dumb, but it's what a dumb person thinks is cool. And in this, I was like, no one looks in the mirror and thinks that's cool.
He was also, what accent was he doing the entire time?
I don't know. It was like, a little
goofy dude.
Yeah.
I liked him. I did like him creating the Green Lantern middle fingers in the end fight. That was fun. But yes, I agree with you.
How are they going to square this Green Lantern with the very totally different television show Lanterns?
He's in it. He's in the show.
I know. How are they going to square
that? I don't know.
That's crazy.
Apparently he's given interviews. Nathan Fillion's like, yep, he's the same dude in that. Which makes me have serious questions about the tone of the HBO show.
Agreed.
It's clearly different than I thought. I love Isabella Merced also, and I thought she was really underserved as Hawk Girl. Like,
yeah. Yes.
Her just screaming the entire time.
And I tell you what, I didn't need the screaming.
No,
I did not
too much.
Need it. Not necessary. And like not, like hurt a little. Let me be honest. Dolby sound.
One of my favorite characters. She has such a great, cool backstory and a lot of great stuff. I didn't feel like this was a different Hawk Girl. I was like, it felt so different and I almost couldn't connect to it. But I love her as an actor. I thought she's great in a ton of stuff.
Yeah, it's good casting and I'm glad they got her, but she just... It was one of those things, like a lot of the Daily Planet staff, where it was like, why are you here? I'm not quite sure what you're adding to this movie necessarily, versus setting up an eventual Justice League or Justice League International or whatever they're going to do. There are a bunch Justice of other characters game. In the movie we can talk about. We haven't talked about the engineer necessarily.
Well, real quick on just, I loved the way they took the horrifying moment from Superman 3 and just made it a character here too, and used it well for its horror ends. And I like the final confrontation where Superman was fully beaten, dying, and came back through sheer force of will. I thought that was cool.
Yeah. One thing I will say, which is sort of like a side thing about the Engineer, but the Engineer is a Wildstorm character who was initially part of Stormwatch. And eventually the Authority. It was weird to me as a comic book fan, see them be like, yep, that's Planet Watch is what they're part of. Like, it's just slightly off. But I do want to laud the movie for not turning it into an Easter egg hunt the entire time, which I thought was great. Like, there are Easter eggs in there. On the highway towards the end, there's a Gotham City sign, so you know that it's close by somewhere. There was... I think like a Jurgens Way or something like that, calling out Dan Jurgens in one scene that I saw. But it's not the sort of thing where, for the most part, the characters, despite what I said about Hawkgirl, the characters are there to serve the plot, not just being like, ooh, look at that guy who's hanging out with Rick Flagg. He's from issue 862 of Superman, and this is going to be a big thing for the next movie. Like, they were just building the movie, I think, for the most part, by the movie.
Right. It's like the opposite of what we talked about with the recent Spider-Man animated series, where it's just all Easter eggs for no reason. This was no Easter eggs, really, because there's a story that you should be paying attention to better.
Yeah. Even Rick Flagg is not like, I'm sure this is going to tie into his appearance in Peacemaker season 2 in some way. But his role in there was to be government official who is sympathetic to superheroes. And that's pretty much it. What were you going to say, Pete?
I was just going to say that, speaking of fun characters, my favorite line was James Gunn's brother saying, I think we can all agree Lex Luthor sucks.
Playing Maxwell Lord.
Why wasn't he in the movie more? That was weird that Sean Gunn wasn't there more.
Aren't we seeing him in some other movie?
Well, he's going to be in Peacemaker, and then, yes, probably. So maybe that directly contradicts what we just said.
I will say, these moments or these characters, Easter eggs, if you want to call them that, the camera actually shows, like, we are meant to see them. It's not like something where you're catching it.
Kara Zor-El, who we didn't get to see her face at all.
Yeah. What? What are you talking about?
Hair was covered. She didn't really get to see her.
She was doing like her hairstyle.
She was kind of a drunken, stumbling around.
Did you watch The Ring instead? Like you saw Samara from The Ring with her hair in front of her? Because you could clearly see her face in several scenes. Her and John Cena showing up as Peacemaker to me were the most clearly like ties to the bigger universe. But yeah. Also, we know Peacemaker season 2 is coming, so that's what that's kind of
gotta
teeing
plug
up.
It.
And
plug
Supergirl
it.
Is done in production, so we know that's coming. So I do want to, again, like, laud them for only including things and teeing up things that are actually 100% happening versus things that may never happen. Can we very quickly talk about Crypto? Because that is a major part of the movie that we haven't talked about. What did you think of Crypto?
Well, the kids sitting next to me were very much thought Crypto was their favorite part. Mm-hmm. It was tough because it was like they went with this idea that Crypto is a young dog and still being trained, so not really aware of. So like it was a little frustrating to be like, Crypto, get it together, we need you, buddy. But yeah, by the end, you really kind of they justified it because like, well, it's a drunken dog, so she's not going to train the dog, and you know things she thinks are cool are not cool for everybody else.
You have
else.
Such uncle energy. You're like, she's too drunk. Dog's not trained enough. We got to get these guys together. Otherwise, this movie universe is never going to make it to college. I thought Crypto was cool. To your point, Pete, my wife and the kids loved it. We have a dog that's a puppy that acts like that. We felt seen for like, wow, our dog is crazy. And it felt better for us to watch Crypto be annoying as well.
Drunk.
Yeah. Sorry, I like to party just with Supergirl. I will say Crypto was used in the movie too many times, too many times to save the day or do something important. You get like three. You get three spots for that dog, and it's too many times.
Do you know what? I was talking to my wife about this yesterday. The whole Crypto get the toy thing was set up from something that Superman didn't see. Like him eating Mr. Terrific's little T-spheres happened to Mr. Terrific. Superman, meanwhile, was the anti-proton river holding up baby Joey. So he didn't actually know about it. And it felt like her suggestion, which I thought was very smart, if there was something that he was trying to train Crypto to do over the course of the movie, which was like get the toy, that would have paid off much nicer versus the way they did pay it off, which was something that didn't really make a whole lot of sense.
Almost inferring that hey, Superman's been trying to train this dog and it's not going well.
I was a little torn by the idea, like I do think they layered in very nicely him being like, this isn't my dog the entire movie, and it was not in fact his dog.
Yeah, that was good.
It's a fun bit.
But to sort of turn it towards the future, let's talk about that Supergirl moment, which we've already touched on a little bit. For anybody who doesn't know, this is very explicitly teeing up the story of the Supergirl movie, which is based on Supergirl Woman of Tomorrow by Tom King and Bilquis Evely, which is a fantastic series.
Amazing series.
We reviewed it. We talked about it at length on one of the episodes of the Comic Book Club podcast, so you can go back and listen to that. But in it, it starts off with her getting, like Superman says, wasted on a planet with a red sun. Some other things happen there that do definitely involve Crypto. So it's all clear set up for that. She's going to go off and be in that movie. I did think it was weird that was not a post-credit scene. I feel like it broke up the flow of the ending of the movie a little bit.
Well, especially, I think you've made hay of this, Alex. Like, the post-credit scenes were sort of... I liked the Crypto and Superman looking at Earth. It's I thought cute. That was nice. It was cute. The post-credit thing about the buildings not lined up, I was like, this is not even good enough to be post-credit. This is nothing. And like, but I do think they needed that scene there so that everyone saw it. And to your point also, people still don't stick around and watch those for some reason. So I think they needed people to see it, so it had to be there.
Also, it's kind of weird that, I don't know, it seemed like Marvel started the after credits and then... And now it's just the thing that all movies are doing, so...
Well, James Gunn has talked about it a little bit. He seemingly was very frustrated with the after credits he was supposed to do for Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 in particular, where he set up Adam Warlock, and he was like, I don't know how I'm going to do that. And then in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, he did include Adam Warlock, and he likes and he was happy with what he did with Adam Warlock, but he described it as putting a square peg in a round hole that he had basically, like, force it in there to make it work. So this seems like a very specific rejoinder to that of, he said, if we do after credit scenes, they're just going to be fun little things. We're not going to be setting things up. And maybe to the point that we're talking about, he's overcorrected a little bit in the wrong direction.
Yeah.
Or maybe the reason it was he wanted the kind of Supergirl stuff for the teeing up and not have people miss it, you know?
Yes, that's what Justin said. But I think, like, also, it ends up being a weird continuity thing because Crypto has left the last scene and then he is back the post-credit scene. Doesn't really matter, but I was kind of like, huh, when does this take place? When did it was,
I agree, and it's just a little sticking point in your brain, but but still.
Lots more to talk about. I did want to briefly mention Alan Tudyk as robot number 4. Gary, another sarcastic robot. He does
the dude's all robots.
Well. Yeah, he's all robots all the time. Any other moments for the movie before we talk about like future looking?
Two things. I think we comedically have to put away the name Gary for a while. Like that's a funny name. We all know that.
Yeah.
My Uncle Gary, very, very funny name. But we've done it too many times as that being the punchline of a, like, I'll call myself Gary or my weird cousin. It's Gary, all right. The other thing I really, really liked that we haven't touched on yet is the Lex calling out the different fight numbers over the course of it. Like, I thought that was just such a nice, like, AI, data-driven, this always works, and a way for someone who doesn't have power to feel like they're in charge. And then to defeat him in the middle of that, I thought that was just really, I really like that. It's such a weird idea, but it really worked, I thought.
Yeah. Pete, any other moments you want to call out?
I've been thinking about what I was saying about Lex Luthor, and it's just hard because Grant Morrison exists and is kind of like a Lex Luthor, so it just seems weird that we're not casting him as Lex Luthor.
You want to cast him as Lex Luthor? Sure.
Yeah, he walks around looking like Lex Luthor. And so, yeah, I think they would be a good choice.
Yeah. Shouts to Michael Ian Black in the movie as well. As
that was a Tucker surprise. Carlson. They never gave him a name. Do you think he's the Creeper? Because I think he's probably the Creeper.
I mean, again, they weren't pushing Easter eggs, but that one could have been. It was right there.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about the future, because I think I said this at the beginning. James Gunn has been taking this very careful approach. He's been very explicit multiple times about saying, we're not going to greenlight anything until we're really happy with the script and it's 100% done, which has led to not a lot of projects that we know about are officially greenlit. Like we talked about, we know that Supergirl is coming out next June, that is filmed, they're editing it, doing effects, whatever, that's going to come out. Lanterns, the HBO show, is about, I think, halfway through production, so should be coming out next year as well. The only other DCU project, there's a bunch of other DC Studios projects, but the only other DCU projects we know about are Peacemaker Season 2, which is coming out in August. We know that there's going to be a second season of Creature Commandos, and then there's the Clayface movie, which apparently was a surprise to them because Mike Flanagan's script was so good, but was not part of the original plan. So given all that, what's next? Like, is that enough to tide us over for the next couple of years? For like a little bit of context, I remember this so clearly. The Monday morning after Iron Man, Marvel held a conference call where they were like, that did really well, so here goes. Here's our entire plan up till Avengers. We're going to do all of these movies, and then they did them. Is DC going to do something like that tomorrow as we're taping? Are they going to keep taking it careful? What's next?
I bet they will continue to be more careful. If this movie is working, right? I think it's hitting what it needs to hit. But that means that this creative first, let's have a script policy that they're doing, and letting a movie like Clayface that is creatively distinguishing itself go into production and be made, that maybe means that all of these things are just going to be good. Then that's great. Then it's okay to take a little time, and maybe they will speed up a little bit production on these other things, again, making sure the creative's in the right place. I think that's the best possible situation. Though I was anti-Creature Commandos, and it does feel like that's going forward, so I don't know.
I agree with the JT says. I think, this is good news for them. I also think that with Supergirl and Krypto being so popular in this, that will kind of help make Supergirl a great movie as well, if they're getting more of the Krypto that people want.
Yeah, I think, you know, not to box office prognosticate too much, but I think it's the sort of thing of like, and we don't know what it's going to end up at this weekend as we're taping, but if it got $200 million, that's the sort of thing where you get Warner Brothers being like, more, 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 we need more, more, give us more money, let's go. And yeah. If it had bombed, obviously we'd be having a very different conversation where they'd be pivoting entirely from the plaid. The way that it's hitting is like just above or right at the mark where they're probably breathing a sigh of relief of like, oh, this worked. Yeah. And I think that gives James Gunn enough and Peter Safran enough ammunition to be like, exactly what you're saying, Justin. Our script forward approach is working. Let's keep with it. Let's not greenlight Teen Titans and Batman Brave and the Bold and everything with like half-baked scripts right now. Let's wait and see. We got a couple of other irons in the fire. We got the Batman Part 2. We have Dynamic Duo, the animated movie that they're doing. They have a couple of other things that are going to keep like the money flowing, but they want to make sure the stuff is good. So I agree with you. I think there is a world where maybe we do see three or four announcements happen this week, but I think more likely they're going to keep playing it careful.
That's exciting.
Maybe a couple.
It's exciting about the Clayface movie, though. You know, it's nice to hear a script is so good that it kind of won everybody over.
That's great. Rumor has it it's built out of the Feet of Clay Batman episode.
Ooh.
Batman animated series.
Which is awesome.
Yeah.
Very good. I was going to say one other thing that, oh, that's what making movies used to be called? Where you have a script and you do that. So, like, I think we're really just being, it's like, maybe they'll do this crazy thing, like what everyone did every time before the, like, sugar rush, the Pez freak out that was the Marvel, the beginning of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
It's not, you know, don't blame Iron Man for being able to, you know, get a bunch of comedians together and make an amazing movie. You know what I mean?
I'm not blaming it. I'm just saying, like, it got out of hand. Like, it got to the point where, like, they started to make stuff that they didn't know how to make with a lot of the recent movies. And, you know, that's, it's really a tragic. It's really a tragedy that they took the biggest, most successful engine that they were building while it was going. And to use an old improv term, like, build the plane while you're flying it.
Yeah.
They did that for billions and billions of dollars of movie budget money, and it worked so hard until it didn't. And it's been a series of, like, half-finished planes barely landing and making their way through. So, like, I agree it's time to change. I hope, truly, that Marvel can do the same thing and go back to making movies.
Just to wrap up this particular thought here, just to do like for the business side, let's talk for the fan side. What would you want to see if they start announcing a slew of movies and TV shows? I'll mention apparently James Gunn from working on the movie is considering the ideas of a Mr. Terrific TV show and a Jimmy Olsen TV show spitting out of this, though.
Careful.
But what would you want to see? Like, as a fan of this stuff, what would you be most excited to see directly after this? And I'll start just like, this is the dumbest thing to say, but I'm worried based on what James Gunn has said that they're going to veer away from this. I would like to see a Superman 2 because he has said like, yeah, I have an idea for a Superman thing. And I'm like, do a Superman 2. That's all I need.
I have two answers. I was going to say the same thing. Like, let's get a sequel going because we're going to want another one of these in two and a half years, I think.
Yeah.
So, like, that means you have to start now with the nugget of an idea. So I think Superman 2 would be a good thing for him to go directly into working on. I do think, it feels like Tom King was a big player in the buildup of this movie. He feels important to the creative here. And he's been working on a character that I think we've all heard of called Wonder Woman for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like a Wonder Woman spinning out of the recent Tom King run is maybe a move they will make. Batman, they're going to stick to the Trinity, I feel like, and Wonder Woman movies have worked from a box office perspective. So I think it's a smart move to go that way.
Well, I think they started this fun bit of the Justice Gang. You know, so it would be nice if we kind of picked up and saw maybe how that turns into the Justice League. And that'd be a good way to kind of get Wonder Woman in there.
It's funny. I feel like what they were doing with Justice Gang is so, like, not necessarily the Justice League, the, like, comedy version of it. Like, is that where we're headed? Could they do that? Would they do that?
Well, they've already said, and who knows where we are on this, but that they're going to continue Jolo Maraduena's Blue Beetle, like he exists in the DCU.
Yeah.
And then they also were at some point working on a Booster Gold TV show, and part of the not necessarily the Justice League is Blue Beetle and Booster Gold having this very odd couple friendship going on. So that would be fun. I mean,
What about Justice League movie, but it's really just about the Wonder Twins? You know what I mean? That's what everybody wants.
Here's the thing. I don't want them to jump to a Justice League, but my main fear right now is they go like, Superman, great. Throw Batman in there so we get Batman v Superman again. And they're like, next up, do Justice League. Don't do that. Superman 2.
Yeah.
That's what we want. Superman 2. Agree with you on a Wonder Woman movie. I am personally totally fine with them scrapping whatever they're going to do with Batman Brave or the Bold and just wrapping Robert Pattinson's Batman into this universe. Yeah. It's a tonal clash, but we already have a tonal clash going on here. So, like, that's fun.
The darkness of the pocket universe is right next to Gotham City. Like, what are we doing? Like, you can make these tones work together.
100%. We shall see as the DCU officially kicks off. We'll be back with this podcast for Peacemaker in just a month, I think. It's coming up very soon. So that's pretty exciting. If you'd like to support this podcast and all the podcasts we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Facebook and YouTube.
Sure do.
Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about Superman, Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice. To subscribe, listen, and follow the show, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, Dad... Great job. We're so proud of you.
Really good work, Dad. And, Dad, can you please, you need to get the candy out of one of your son's mouths, and we need it now. Let's go.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQBar plant protein bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQBars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
Everyone has a fave Wendy's frosty flavor. And when you're choosing from chocolate or vanilla, it's not that hard. But now there's all new frosty swirls and frosty fusions. So try picking your fave from Oreo brownie fusion, Pop-Tarts strawberry fusion, strawberry swirl, brownie batter swirl, caramel swirl, and caramel crunch fusion. Not so easy now, huh? For a fresh way to frosty, gotta be Wendy's. Open till midnight or later.
At participating U.S. Wendy's, hours may vary by location. Oreo is a trademark of Mondelez International Group. Pop-Tarts is a trademark of Kellogg North America Co., LLC. Used with permission.